Taking on debt is a daily fact of life for most American households. The data shows the highest income households carry the largest amount of debt. But debt levels among poor, near poor, and moderate income households has ballooned over the past decade. Kristen Seafelt wanted to find out why low to moderate income households are borrowing and what happens when they do. She's an assistant professor at the University of Michigan School of Social Work. Kristen, I grew up hearing my mother over and over again talking about borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. And most of us do exactly that, don't we?
Right. However, the problem is when you have very low income, there's nothing there to pay back Peter. And people just sink further into debt.
What questions did you really want to drill down on in your research in this study?
Originally, I wanted to understand what low and moderate income families were doing to make ends meet during an economic downturn. So our state, our economy imploded a little bit earlier.
Ground zero, really.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And that was the question I was most interested in answering at the time. And people started talking about the large amounts of debt that they carried and how they were using credit cards when their paycheck wasn't stretching because their hours were being cut at work or they'd lost their job, things like that. And so it became very clear that debt really played a crucial, although difficult, role in people's economic survival strategies.
I know in reading notes about your study, I got a clear sense that there are several key reasons people borrow, including something, a term I had not heard before, consumption smoothing.
Yeah, consumption smoothing is really, you know, an economic term, just a fancy way of saying, what do people do in order to maintain either their current lifestyle or, in many cases, you know, sort of the bare bone minimums in a time when they have less income, when there's been a job loss, when someone has had a health emergency, when there's been a divorce. So what do people do in that period of time when income drops?
And what are the other reasons we get into debt?
Taking out mortgages. And that historically has been considered good debt. You know,
the kind house, of investing in my future.
I'm investing in my future. I'm going to accumulate wealth because this house is going to appreciate in value. Similarly, taking on student loans. The more education you have in general, the more you earn over your lifetime. So people take on student debt as an investment as well.
That's a different kind of debt. One might say a more positive motivation than I need those shoes. I don't care if I can't afford them. I want them now and I have the plastic.
Yeah. I didn't really find this sort of frivolous spending to be something that people were engaging in. You know, a few people said that when they were younger, like when they turned 18, they got credit cards. They didn't know what that meant, how to deal with it. And they accumulated some debt then, but they kind of learned their lesson. And, you know, now that they were older and as parents, that's just not what their money was being spent on anymore.
So I guess, who did you study and for how long?
Yeah. These were all women, low to moderate income, living in Southeast Michigan, predominantly in Detroit, but not exclusively. And myself and some other research assistants interviewed them each year, usually in the summer, between 2006 and 2011. And they were, you know, all mostly low and moderate income. Mm-hmm. Some had very low income, about, you know, half of what the federal poverty line is. So we're talking like $7,000 a year for them to survive on.
And what'd you find?
There just isn't enough money to make ends meet. So people do go into debt. And that can range from using your credit cards to buy things you would have normally paid cash for, like your groceries. It also might mean paying your utility provider a little bit money here, paying your car note the next month, and shifting around expenses.
I think most people would totally go, yeah, I get that. You know, you borrow and you don't have that income, it can put you more into the hole. What do you want us to take away from this study?
First, to sort of dismiss this notion that on the lower end of the income spectrum, people aren't just spending money foolishly. People are really trying to meet their very basic needs, you know, keeping a roof over their head, keeping their kids fed. Sometimes they would go without food, but they made sure their kids were fed, you know, and, you know, be able to get to and from work. So that usually meant maintaining a car, but that could go by the wayside too. We're not talking about people spending frivolously. Second, it's really the need to go into debt was really driven by, you know, these larger economic forces, you know, the Great Recession. People lost jobs, people's hours were cut, people who had commission-based salaries saw their commissions dwindle down to nothing. So money that they'd once been able to count on was just no longer there. And then, you know, having followed people for, you know, a number of years, when folks would get new jobs, they weren't anywhere near as well paying as what they had been making.
They might even be part-time.
They might be part-time. And when people would finally get on some sort of government assistance like unemployment insurance or other kinds of public benefits, that often took a long time. And so there were many months in between job loss and benefit receipt where they had to, you know, keep things running, and there was no cash coming in the household.
So you have to pull out a card and a credit card and hope that you can do that. In the 4 years since you stopped studying these people and as the economy has started to recover in Michigan, do you think things are better for them or still the same kind of situation you saw from 2006 to 2011?
So I'm hoping to go back. My guess would be from some of the limited communications I've had with a couple people are doing a little bit better. A couple of people who I seem to have disappeared off the face of the internet, at least. There were a couple of people when I last saw them, I was very, very concerned for them. You know, people who had lost their homes, going from one friend to another, lost their children to Child Protective Services. I do worry about them. My guess would be that most people, though, are sort of maintaining a status quo. But that status quo is the new status quo, and it's not as good as it once was maybe in 2003, 4, and 5.
And if you could get your study and your findings into the hands of policymakers, what do you hope they'd take away from that?
First and foremost, what's been on my mind is, you know, there's been a real move to be very punitive about our safety net right now. I mean, the current discussions are about, in Kansas, only letting recipients of benefits take out $25 of cash at a time because somehow they think that people are misspending their money. When you have such a limited amount of money, you can't really afford to misspend it. Every program we have, yes, there are going to be a handful of people who are cheating the system or
gaming it.
Mm-hmm. For the most part, though, people are just trying to get by. They're trying to get their kids to school. They're trying to go to work. And that job may be a crappy one. These benefits are sort of a floor that people can then build upon. That's sort of the first message. The second message is we do need to do some things to make it easier for people to negotiate payment plans, do more outreach to help people deal with wage garnishment, which is another thing I saw a lot of. That is creditors coming after people's paychecks and taking, you know, having authority to take them, taking their income tax refund. And that was highly disruptive because it sort of came out of the blue for people and they were counting on that money. So making that
process. But one would argue the people that loan the money are counting on being repaid.
They are counting on being repaid. But it's a court process and it's not a very transparent one. And so increasing some transparency, giving, you know, the people who are about to be garnished some opportunity to work things out beforehand would be very crucial.
Doesn't that come, though, with past due notices and call us to make arrangements for payment? And do people ignore that until the heavy hand of garnishment comes down on them?
Yeah, some people do ignore it. That's not the majority, but some people do. And usually because they are under such stress from other parts of their life. They're just dealing with so much. Lots of women, though, told me that they wanted to work out payment plans and found the person on the other end of the line quite belligerent and were really kind of taken aback by that. And then other people said they did work out payment plans, but the payment plans themselves became unreasonable and they couldn't keep up. Yes, we want people to be able to repay their money, but then fundamentally, if that's what we really want, then we need to do something about the wage structure. If you go from making $16 an hour to making $8 an hour, something has to give and it might be accumulating more debt. But then if you can never get back up to $16 an hour, you're not going to ever be able to repay.
And I do hear kind of a deeper theme of overall attitudes towards struggling, impoverished people.
Yeah. There's an arm of research around poverty that is trying to pick out some of the most extreme cases. And those sort of feed into negative stereotypes. And the people I interviewed were mostly, this might sound negative, but kind of boring. They were just trying to get by, you know, and not trying to commit fraud and not trying to game the system, trying to get to work. But it was just, there were just so many hurdles put in their way and so little help provided as well.
Kristen Seafeld is an assistant professor at the University of Michigan School of Social Work, and it certainly sounds like this is a piece and a continuum of research, and it's a question you're going to keep on exploring.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks for speaking with us today, Kristen.
Thank you.
And we always want to hear from you. What stories are you focusing on or people you want to hear more about? Just let us know. And it's easy. Find us on Facebook. Search for Stateside with Cynthia Canty. We're on Twitter at Stateside Radio, and we're at MichiganRadio.org. Click the link that says Stateside.